Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, July 28th in Memphis, Tennessee. I guess everywhere in America it is, but here we are. And we're going out to the AMFM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Great first hour behind us, but two more barn burners still to come. Keith Alexander back from the green room. Now, when we had Pat Shannon on during the latter part of the first hour, Keith went to be serviced by the concubines here at WLRM. And how was it, Keith?
Not like that at all, believe me. James's testosterone count must be up tonight. The way he was carrying on about that Greek athlete, and now he's come up with this one. I tell you what, we got to get this boy a cold shower.
Yeah, I tell you. Actually, you know, speaking of testosterone, you know, I've got all the symptoms of a, well, it's not symptoms, but all the prerequisites of a man destined to have prostate cancer. I mean, a gargantuan sex drive, early balding. What else was it? we can't say what Keith just said, but anyway, I actually did have to go and get a physical for that the other day, and that was an interesting. Too much information starting to come out here in the cesspool. I mean, we tell you the whole truth and nothing but the truth, but not everything's for public consumption. But anyway, we do have a story here that is. I'm not even going to provide any commentary on this story before we get into it. I'm just going to read it and let the story speak for itself. And this is a story out of Jerusalem. An Israeli lawmaker tore up a copy of the New Testament in front of cameras in his parliament office. An aide says Christian missionaries mailed the Christian scripture to Michael Ben Ari of the National Union Party. Ben Ari, an Orthodox Jew, was so enraged to receive the Bible, in whose name he says millions of Jews were slaughtered. He tore it up and then posed for photographs with the remnants of the destroyed Bible. He then went on to say that this abominable book, talking about the New Testament, brought about the murder of millions of Jews. He said sending him a copy of the New Testament was a provocation by church missionaries, and that there's no doubt that this book and those who sent it belong in the garbage can of history, quote unquote. And you can go read that story for yourself. That was a Yahoo News story that we linked to. They're at thepoliticalcesspool.org, thepoliticalcesspool.org. We even have a picture of this man tearing up the Bible, smiling while he wears his yarmulke. So, Keith, in return for all the blessings that we give Israel, I guess this is what we get in return.
Yeah, the guy really has it wrong. It's not the New Testament. It's not the Christian faith that has resulted in the murder of a lot of Jews throughout history. It's the absolutely abominable behavior of Jews when they are in countries that are not predominantly Jewish. It's absolutely amazing when you look at the historical record. There's a guy named Ravello Oliver who has a website. All you have to do is type his name, click it on, and you'll get into this tidbit that I'm going to give you now. Basically, every nation in the Middle East, in Asia, and in Europe has expelled Jews from their country not once but twice. The only places that haven't done it are in the New World. Like the United States, North America, South America, Australia, places like that. Every place that had them in the Middle Ages expelled them, many of them, more than once. And the reason is these people were subversive. They continue to do what they're doing in America today, which is forging alliances with white Gentile elites and selling out the interests and trying to subvert and undermine the interests of the white masses in their nation. So consequently, if they want to know why they are unpopular, they need to look in the mirror. They need to look at the historical record of their behavior, James.
Well, there it is, and there it is for the world to see. Those who are willing to see, let them see. Those who are willing to hear, let them tune into the political cesspool. But, you know, interestingly enough, you know, we were talking with Pat Shannon for a moment about the Chick-fil-A story, and, you know, the media has manufactured this supposed great rift between the pro and anti Chick-fil-A factions. Well, over 90% of the country agrees with Chick-fil-A's traditional and biblical stand against sodomy. The only people who don't are the members of that sex cult called homosexuality and the people who control the media. And obviously there's going to be a lot of overlap in those two camps. But you have a single-digit percentage of people who are pro-sodomite and are bashing Chick-fil-A. You have 90-plus percent of the people who agree with Chick-fil-A stand, and yet this so-called controversy is one of the biggest stories in the country, as if there is truly a rift here. Well, get this, Keith. So you got the Christians and Chick-fil-A on one side. You got the sodomites and the media on the other. Did you see the story on Channel 5 here in Memphis earlier this week? There has been a Chick-fil-A manager who has defected. And even though he's the manager of a Chick-fil-A in South Haven, Mississippi, of all places, he has come out against the Chick-fil-A company line on sodomy. And this man says, as a Jew, and this is his words, as a Jew, I cannot support the Chick-fil-A line on homosexuality. So you got one person in all of Chick-fil-A that has come out against Chick-fil-A. He's employed by this Baptist chain. He comes out against them. He's Jewish.
What'd we tell you, folks? I tell you, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight, and we hit the nail on the head here at the Political Cesspool. So much for all of this much ballyhooed fundamentalist Christian outreach to the Jewish community. When it, push comes to shove, when you get down to the nut cutting, as we say down here in the South, you'll find the Jews lining up against the hated white Gentiles, and there's nobody that is more white or more Gentile than fundamentalist Christians. You'll find them lining up against them every time. Quite frankly, I wonder when fundamentalist Christians and Christians generally are going to tire of getting kicked in the groin by the Jewish community and Jewish power and influence, when they're going to realize the truth that is there, just like the emperor's new clothes. That the Jews are the primary force that is working for their dispossession and ultimate disappearance from the world.
Well, when we get back after covering those two stories, there are many more stories that we've posted to our official internet headquarters this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org that we've not yet had the time or will have the time to get to this evening. But you can read them for yourselves at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I did some follow-up commentary on the horrific shootings in Colorado, and basically I said two things that the media is not going to tell you. Number one, you have more gun control legislation. It's only going to ensure that shootings like that happen more often, and I go into that a little bit. And secondly, this guy should be executed. You know, the only problem with the death penalty is that it's not used nearly enough, and I elaborate on those points and much more this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Keith, we got about 30 seconds to break. What are you going to be talking about when we come back for the remainder of this hour?
We're going to be talking about several behind-the-lines stories that were in the local newspaper here in Memphis, one having to do with the controversy involving the proposed creation of municipal school districts in the suburban municipalities in Shelby County, Tennessee. Shelby County is a large, probably the largest county in Tennessee, and it's where Memphis is located. Secondly, about another way to ingratiate yourself to the elites, and we'll leave it at that. Hope you enjoy these messages from our sponsor.
Coming your way right after these messages.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
When the truth is found.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up at the top of the third hour, Bill Rowland, our co-host, will be in studio. He's actually driving down to the station right now, and when he gets here, he's going to be bringing to you an interview that I think people will be talking about for a long time to come. You're going to hear the incredible and frightening story of Dr. Tom Sell, who was once a prominent dentist in the St. Louis area, in addition to being a major in the Army Reserve. Dr. Tom Sell spent 8 years in prison without ever being brought to trial. His story was the subject of a Dateline NBC episode, and we'll have the scoop for you tonight when Bill Rowland arrives at the top of the third hour. But between now and then, we're going to go behind enemy lines with Keith Alexander. Keith, what do you have in store for the audience?
Well, let's jump right into it. Let's talk, first of all, if we can, about Tim McCarver. Now, Tim McCarver may be an obscure person to most of you, but he was recently inducted into Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame, Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Not as a player, even though he played for four decades. He played in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, primarily for St. Louis and for the St. Louis Cardinals and the Philadelphia Phillies. He's a local hometown Memphis product, and when I was growing up, particularly in the 60s, where which was really his heyday, he was a member of the All-Star team at that time. He was probably the most important or the best-known Memphis professional athlete. He was the catcher for Bob Gibson and all of these people that were supposedly, you know, great All-Stars in the St. Louis Cardinal organization. He starred in the 1964 World Series in which the Cardinals played the Yankees. But as my wife noted many times to me, she'd never seen a guy cast into the memory hole quite like Tim McCarver had been in, let's say, the 90s and the first decade of the 21st century in Memphis than Tim McCarver. The professional ball field in Memphis, a professional baseball stadium in which Memphis's minor league team had been located, was called Tim McCarver Stadium. It was located in the Fairgrounds Complex in Memphis until we got a AAA affiliate and they somehow bamboozled some guilty white liberal in Memphis, a guy named Dean Jernigan, into building a large, new, state-of-the-art ball field downtown. Of course, they didn't rename it Tim McCarver Stadium. Now, when has that happened? Tim McCarver hasn't died. You know, it's throwing somebody down the memory hole after their death is something that there's precedent for, but I've never seen somebody thrown down the memory hole while they're still alive. Well, what to do? Apparently, Tim McCarver has figured out the way to get back in the good graces of the elite. And I'm looking for this article right now. Let me see if I can find it. It is McCarver Gives to Memphis Baseball. It's in the Commercial Appeal of Monday, July the 23rd, 2012, this past Monday. Wants more black youth playing games. Playing game, excuse me. No, they're playing games, but not playing baseball. Tim McCarver laments the lack of black participation in baseball, the game that carried him to the pinnacle last weekend. So, during his Saturday afternoon speech at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, where he received the Ford C. Frick Award for his contributions to broadcasting, McCarver announced that he would make a significant contribution to his hometown of Memphis. That money, exactly how much was not announced, will be used to help fund a planned baseball park for inner-city kids, said McCarver, a former St. Louis Cardinal and Philadelphia Phillies player who starred at Christian Brothers High decades ago and is now a television broadcaster. I think he's for the Mets now. He used to be for Philadelphia. In fact, the thing that lengthened his professional career as a Major League Baseball player is that Steve Carlton, who was the pitching ace of the Philadelphia Phillies staff at the time, back in the late 70s and early 80s, insisted that Tim McCarver be his catcher. Apparently they had some a unique chemistry, so that kept McCarver in his unusual, kind of unprecedented four-decade stint in the major leagues. McCarver noted in his Cooperstown speech, "The hope," McCarver said, "is that parks such as this will help rejuvenate interest in the game among black youths." McCarver noted in his Cooperstown speech that black participation in Major League Baseball has fallen from 28% in 1975 to a little more than 8% today. Now, let's break this down. First of all, this is the one and only way that you can be rewarded by the elite nowadays. You have to come out in favor of a minority and implicitly against the interests of white youth. Black kids have all the opportunity in the world. Major League Baseball has sponsored a program called the RBI program that is much ballyhooed here in Memphis. It says Return Baseball to the Inner City is what this acronym stands for. Now, there is no similar program to return basketball to the suburbs. We have an NBA team. We don't have a Major League Baseball team. We have a AAA, a minor league baseball team here in Memphis, but we have an NBA, National Basketball Association, Major League Basketball team. But what about getting white kids involved in the National Basketball Association, which is over 80% black? I think it's something like almost 87% black. Well, there the silence is deafening. You're not going to hear anything about that racial disparity. So racial disparities aren't the problem. The problem is black people aren't getting a big enough part of the pie. There seems to be some assumption that blacks are naturally better athletes, and if whites don't predominate in a sport, that's just natural. But on the other hand, if blacks don't predominate in the sport, or any sport, whatever it is, there must be some pernicious honky plot afoot that's keeping them away. They never have considered the possibility that black kids just don't care for baseball, don't like to play it. They'd much rather play a game like basketball. And they also like football because it comes up with 85 scholarships per school in Division I, and it's a great way to try to get paid for playing sports. One thing that I've noticed by being a lifelong Memphian and having close proximity to black people is that you rarely find a black person that is a true college football fan or basketball fan. The reason is very easy to understand. Basically, you don't find white kids that grow up wanting to be a Memphis Redbird or an Albuquerque Isotope. They want to be a New York Yankee or a St. Louis Cardinal or a Boston Red Sox or something like this. In other words, they're focused on the major leagues. Black kids see college football and basketball as the minor leagues. They may Division I may be the AAA affiliates, but they see the real major league, the real big leagues, as being the NFL and the NBA, and the reason is they get paid. There's a black rap song called Can I Get Paid by Gangsta Boo, who is a female rap artist here in Memphis, and that basically sums up the whole idea. So consequently, black kids ain't studying those type of sports, and baseball is one that they just don't like. Why, on the other hand, McCarver apparently has discovered the formula. This is the way they're probably going to be naming streets and public buildings after him soon enough if he can draw enough money into this. But basically, he can try to drag black kids kicking and screaming down to the baseball park, but they don't dig that. They don't want it. Why do liberals intentionally go against human nature? Why do they insist that black people and non-white Gentiles dominate every facet of life, even baseball, James?
Keith Alexander, tracking the political evolution of one Tim McCarver. We'll be back with more from the professor, Keith Alexander the Great, right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
For too long now, those whose ancestors carved from a vast wilderness an awe-inspiring extension of Western civilization have been without any semblance of political representation. Abandoned by the political establishment, we now face the prospect of losing our national identity, culture, and our way of life. But there is hope. There is still time to right these wrongs, and there is a vehicle to organize our people into a force capable of reclaiming America's destiny. The American Third Position is that vehicle. It's a political party for our people, led by extraordinary patriots like Bill Johnson, Kevin McDonald, and myself, James Edwards. Our ancestors, from the gates of Vienna to the sands of Iwo Jima, sacrificed their all in order to secure Providence's most precious gift. Freedom. Now it's our turn. Learn more at the American Third Position website, American3P.org. That's American, the number three, the letter P.org. This is the American Third Position, American3P.org.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Are you looking for literature from authors who aren't ashamed of their European-American heritage? Are you looking for books that don't shy away from the forbidden facts? You used to look all over the internet for these books, but you can now find them all at the same place, LighthouseLiterature.com. Whether you're looking for rare classics from the great thinkers or the latest and most popular books from guys like me, Lighthouse Literature is your trusted source for the best books at the best prices. For a limited time, you can get my new book, Racism Schmacism, from Lighthouse Literature for only $10. When you make a purchase from www.lighthouseliterature.com, you're helping support dedicated real-world advocates and activists. So, what are you waiting for? Surf on over to LighthouseLiterature.com. LibertyLife.com. A bright light for the right.
To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Youth is wasted on the young, as they say. Bill Rowland has just gotten here and has joined us here in the studio, and he's got a fantastic interview. We were talking about it just a moment ago with Dr. Tom Sellis, coming up in about 30 minutes. You're going to hear the incredible and frightening story of a man, once a prominent dentist in St. Louis and a major in the Army Reserve, who spent 8 years in prison without ever being brought to trial. That's 30 minutes away. You're going to hear his story for a full hour. It was the subject of a Dateline NBC episode. Bill Rowland, very much prepared for this, and he is already here in the studio with us. But first, before we get to Bill and our second of two featured guests of the evening, back to Keith Alexander as we go behind enemy lines. I see a Wendy Thomas article from the Commercial Appeal with the whole thing is highlighted. I mean, the purpose of having a highlighter is to highlight a certain point, but Keith has highlighted the whole article, and I'm sure there's good reason why. Keith, back over to you, my friend.
Yeah, we got Bill here in the on-deck circle swinging the weighted bat, getting ready to jump in at his appointed hour. But let me make a couple of closing comments about the Tim McCarver story. It's really disheartening when you know exactly what is going on, and there's really not anything we can do about it. What is happening with Tim McCarver is indicative of what's happening to our society. All the rewards, all the adulation goes to liberals or people that make some type of gesture that the liberals approve of, like raising money to help black children play baseball. And like I said, meanwhile, there is absolutely no effort being made to help white kids play basketball so they can compete in the NBA. In fact, that's going according to plan, according to the left. They're doing their best to dispossess white kids who used to be a majority of the players in the NBA. They don't want them to have any opportunities. Whenever you mix things, it seems like, you know, the lowest common denominator rules and they run out the higher of the two groups. So consequently, Tim McCarver finds that the golden road to being allowed back into the good graces of being a public figure who is spoken of often and given respect is to be a liberal. This is a message that's not lost on the young folks. Let me tell you, they have groups like Bridge Builders, Leadership Memphis, Leadership Germantown, Leadership Cucamonga, whatever, specifically for the purpose of vetting the new emerging generation and letting them know, like Santa Claus, who's naughty and who's nice. The naughty people are conservatives, the nice people are liberals. If you are determined to be a conservative, then you have been vetted and you know that the phone is not going to ring, you're not going to be offered a position on any charitable board or on any type of career advancement path. On the other hand, if you are the most over-the-top liberal, you'll suddenly find that you're being encouraged to run for the school board, or you're being encouraged to run for the city council. And money is there, folks, to support you and to get you to run a credible campaign, and you'll read glowing reports about yourself in the local newspaper and on the local television stations. You'll hear it. This is how the left and the cultural Marxists run the show. They deny rewards to conservatives, and they give rewards to leftists who are tuned in to the cultural Marxist paradigm. And that's what we're reporting on that Tim McCarver story, which seems to be kind of a minor league thing in many ways. But it's remarkable. We haven't heard Tim McCarver's name uttered on the Commercial Appeal for about 20 years, and all of a sudden, he is front page news in the Commercial Appeal because he has done the right thing and decided to genuflect towards the gods of political correctness. Now, I told you earlier that we're going to talk about the new school controversy, public school controversy in Memphis. Let me give you a little bit of a background for people that aren't familiar with it. The Memphis and Shelby County school systems were separate. Memphis's system was vastly majority black. The school system in the county was majority white, but had a significant percentage of black students, 37%. Now, the Memphis City School people were afraid that the white people's money was going to get away from them. And of course, they can't be expected to run a first-rate system just with black people and black people's money driving the engine. They need, the perennial problem of all black politicians is how to keep or how to get the white people's money without being swamped with the white people's votes. So that's what they were after, and they saw that they might lose control of the predominantly white Shelby County school system. So what did they do? They did what is called in business a reverse merger. What they did was they surrendered their charter, and therefore, under Tennessee law, the county has the ultimate responsibility to educate. So now the new Shelby County school system, which would be the only public school system in Memphis, would, one, be a gargantuan system, two, it would be predominantly black. And, of course, the black people intend to run it, make no mistake about it. The same people that were running the Memphis school systems when all the dust settles would be in charge of this newly expanded countywide county school system in Shelby County. Now, this was alarming to the parents of a lot of people who had kids in the Shelby County school system. The Shelby County school system was, for the most part, in the top five perennially in the state of Tennessee, often the top one. Meanwhile, the Memphis City Schools was the perennial cellar dweller, the one at the very bottom of the school systems in the state of Tennessee. Now, what thinking person would not object to being merged into a situation where the dominant player in this new, improved, larger school system was going to be the same cast of characters that led the Memphis school system in the race to the bottom? But, of course, there could be no excuse for resisting this forced merger, the lend embrace of the Memphis school system into the county school system, but racism. Well, as a result of that, we finally found a few elites, state legislators from the suburban areas, that decided that they would actually work in the interests of their constituents, who are predominantly white. What they did was they went to Nashville, led by a guy named Mark Norris, who's a Republican in the suburbs of Memphis. And what he did was got a law passed that would allow the municipalities, the suburban municipalities in Shelby County, to have their own school systems. That would be Collierville, Germantown, Arlington, Bartlett, where James lives, Millington. All of these places could have their own school systems. Well, there we go. Again, it's all about money, and it's about having enough money to be able to hire every Tom, Dick, and Harry with a black face in Memphis to work for the Memphis City school system. They didn't want to lose that funding because then they might have to run a reasonably small and efficient school system, and of course, that's the last thing they want to do. So all of the predictable angst among the elites has come to fruition. We're finding articles in the newspaper, editorials on the nightly TV news, scolding the suburbanites for wanting to have their own school systems. Let me give you a sampling. This is by the local black columnist in the local Commercial Appeal newspaper, called the Communist Appeal by people there locally, the Sunday, July 1st, 2012 edition, local news section. School diversity demands lawsuit. The research is clear. Desegregated schools boost black students' performance and do not harm white children. In that context, Shelby County Commission lawsuit to halt the creation of municipal school districts is essential. Think the Memphis City Schools, which are 89% black, are segregated. If the county's suburban cities are allowed to form their own municipal districts, it gets worse. Or better, depending on your perspective. The population left in the unified district, which starts in the fall of 2013, would be more than 90% black. Each of the six new municipal districts would be whiter than the Shelby County schools, which are 37% black. If the municipal district student bodies match the city's populations, which the commission suit says would be the case, you might have a district that is just 3.6% black, like the city of Germantown is. At the diverse end, you have Millington, which is 25% black. Also, Arlington is one which will have a predominantly white student body if the school attendance zone matches the boundaries of the city. Okay, now you've had the table laid, and we're going to get back and really unpack this one for you after these words from our sponsors. Thank you.
The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Welcome back from the commercial break, at least. Don't forget, in just 15 minutes' time, give or take, Bill Rowland will be ascending to the chair with the microphone and interviewing, presenting to you, Dr. Tom Sell, You're not going to want to miss what promises to be a riveting interview in just a few minutes. That's going to dominate our third hour. But first, back to Keith Alexander. We're deep behind enemy lines. In fact, Keith was taking a little fire in the terms of chatter during that last segment, but he got us straightened out. Me and Bill chattering too much there while Keith is taking fire. Live rounds over here with Keith. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Keith Alexander.
Grab a gun and fire back at the enemy, man. That's what, that's what we got to do. Well, getting back to Wendy's story without further ado, she says, using the suburban city limits to define the new school districts is roughly a proxy for racial discrimination, reads a 29-page petition filed last week by the county commission with the county commission. This effect robs the children of Shelby County of the right to be educated in a racially integrated system, the petition reads. The law can only be explained as an attempt to guarantee the Caucasian suburban children would never have to attend a school that is predominantly African American. Now see, apparently, this is why you keep hearing Orwellian mantras like diversity is our greatest strength, okay? Obviously, nobody thinks diversity is in the best interest of white children, but nonetheless, we're all supposed to genuflect to the politically correct notion that diversity is a great good. Now, they don't want you to examine the results of diverse schools. They don't want you to focus on the academic achievement of the diverse schools. What they want you to do is to just take it for granted that diversity in and of itself is a good thing, regardless of the effect it has on any children, and in particular, white children. Now, this, they really want the white kids being with the black kids so they can be brainwashed into and coerced into taking a subordinate position to black kids. When you have a predominantly black school, when blacks reach more than 40%, it is really well documented that what's going on is that the black kids wind up dominating all the sports teams, or at least the sports teams that are actually have a following, like basketball and football. Because the coaches are sold out to that idea, the black parents will holler, scream, rend their garments, and gnash their teeth because their kids aren't on the honor roll, their kids aren't in the beta club and whatnot, and you will have a two-tiered system develop. This happens just as naturally as the sun rises in the east and the sun sets in the west, and black kids will be the net beneficiaries, white kids will be the net losers, and that's the whole purpose. They need to indoctrinate white kids to consider themselves losers. That's what they want. Now, apparently, Wendy Thomas wasn't enough. They decided to roll out the big guns. So in the Saturday, July 21st, 2012 edition of the newspaper, on page 5A, there is an article by none other than Maureen Costello. And she is a member of that vaunted charitable and benevolent organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center's Teaching Tolerance Project. And she offers an article entitled, Diverse Schools Are Essential for Nation Success. Okay, now, they're trying to put some meat on the bones of this meaningless slogan, diversity is our greatest strength. Now, diverse schools are essential for our nation's success. Let's listen to the great wisdom of Maureen Costello of the Southern Poverty Law Center. The face of America is changing. In 40 years, the United States will become a minority-majority nation. What type of gobbledygook is that? A remarkable milestone for a country that already boasts one of the most religiously, ethnically, and racially diverse societies in the world. Have you ever noticed how we've been in a constant state of decline as our diversity has increased, Maureen? Economically, socially, culturally, morally, and in every way, diversity is death. But Maureen insists on cleaving to the liberal position that diversity in and of itself is a great benefit. Now back to her article. But you wouldn't know it by looking at our nation's schools. Census and school data tell a very different story. one bullet point. The average white student in the United States goes to a school that is more than three quarters white. Horrors. The fact that blacks are only 13.1% of the population might have something to do with that, Marine. But, of course, I don't expect you and the other ideologues at the Southern Poverty Law Center to ever mention that fact. Second bullet point. One in four children living in poverty attend schools with few middle and upper middle class schoolmates. Guess why? There's this concept called neighborhood schools. It costs money to ship kids from poor neighborhoods to rich neighborhoods, and it's a needless expense because when you do that, you just drive the upper middle class and middle class kids into private schools because their parents have decided not to throw their children into the veritable black hole of Calcutta that public schools become when you start intentionally shipping poor, economically deprived kids into their neighborhoods. They don't sit still to have their children become living human sacrifices on the altar of political correctness. One-third of black and Latino students attend schools with 90 to 100% minority population. In the Northeast, even over half of black students are in majority black schools. Horror. Even in the wonderful garden spot of the nation called New England, they segregate there. Who'd have thunk it? Thus, resegregation of America's schools has only been accelerated by a U.S. Supreme Court decision that marks the 50th anniversary, its fifth anniversary this year. Parents involved in community schools versus Seattle school districts. In that 2007 decision found that districts cannot use race as a factor in assigning children to schools, eliminating a powerful tool for integration and also for destruction of our public educational system. It says, at a time when we should be preparing our children for a diverse nation. Remember, by the year 2042, whites will be a minority. And, of course, Maureen is licking her chops at the prospects, and so is the SPLC. More communities are seeing their schools resegregate. It's not that people are suddenly rallying around an explicit call to return to Jim Crow-era school segregation, but that we have lost sight of the value of integration. We started viewing education as nothing more than another consumer choice. We cannot treat education as a consumer choice because it's much too important, she goes on. If we do not instill in today's students an appreciation for diversity, it will be difficult, if not impossible, for our country to succeed in the 21st century economy. In other words, what they're doing to us is that they're insisting that somehow diversity is going to be great for the economy. What it's going to do, it's driving us down. The lines of the world economy now are homogenous populations like China. China doesn't invite the world into its borders. Every nation that does that is seeing a decline in their position in the world's economy. The Asian tigers don't like them. They don't want that. So why do our elites insist upon telling us that somehow it's going to be good for us to have racial integration in the schools and to have ever-increasing numbers of non-whites in the population? Basically because they want you to disappear from the face of the earth. They want to destroy what they consider the unfair white hegemony in America, and they can't do it unless they have direct access to your kids. Once they have that direct access in these fully integrated public schools in which minorities predominate, then they've got you where they want you. They're on top, you're on the bottom, and that's where they want you to stay. How about it, James?
Keith Alexander making up for last week. You know, Keith's family had a little issue that needed to be dealt with. Keith, at the last minute, was not able to be with us. But he made up for the lost time with that second hour alone tonight, not to mention the first half hour where Keith was with us before he went to the concubines in the green room. But anyway, he is Keith Alexander the Great, everybody. And if you can't get enough of Keith, that's a good thing, because he'll be back with us next week, right here, same time, same place, here in the Political Cesspool radio program. But Keith will now be taking a much-needed and well-deserved timeout as he makes room for Bill Rowland, who'll be sliding into his chair, as Bill will be interviewing Dr. Tom Sell here live on our nationally syndicated and award-winning broadcast in just a few minutes. So stay tuned for that, ladies and gentlemen. Still much more to come tonight in the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm James Edwards, and I'll see you at the top of the third hour right on the other side of this commercial break.
Right after these messages.
They call the rising sun.